Ever thought about Botox but worried you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Bite into a stack sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams of protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises. Just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread see nutrition facts on hero.co.
Welcome to the Divergent Files podcast.
Everybody knows the fake moon story, the blurry photos, the red circles, the NASA found alien buildings crowd. Every third thumbnail looks like somebody circled a potato and called it a secret base. But forget that version. Honestly, the real version is meaner. The most watched thing in the night sky had an entire side no human being had ever seen until 1959. And that's not fringe. That's not me winding you up. That's just true. And people really should be more bothered by that than they are. We built calendars around the moon. We timed the tides by it, planted under it. We wrote stories about it. We even prayed under it. I mean, hell, a lot of people made terrible decisions under it. We spent all of human history acting like we knew that thing, but we didn't. We knew one side of it, and that was it. Nobody saw the other half until the Soviets sent Luna 3 around the back and brought home those ugly little photos from a place no human being had ever actually seen. And once that side enters the record, the whole moon story gets weird in a hurry. Pretty quickly, the military is sketching lunar base plans. Apollo keeps slipping behind the one part nobody on Earth can watch cleanly. And some of the record around all this gets messier than it probably should. And now, decades later, everybody's suddenly in a hurry to get back up there. And that should bother you a little. Because most moon conspiracies really are junk. Pure carnival trash. A lot of the time. And that part's true. But once you strip out the loud nonsense, the weird part doesn't go away. If anything, it gets harder to ignore. And the deeper you go into the far side of the moon, the less it feels like a place we discovered, and the more it feels like a place we showed up to late. So let me save you a few hours of internet poison right up front. A lot of moon stuff is garbage. Some of it's fake. Some of it is just people zooming into compression artifacts like they're decoding ancient truth out of a gas station security camera. And that matters because the moon makes people stupid in both directions. One side thinks every blurry pixel is an alien condo. The other side hears one guy in a polo shirt say pareidolia and suddenly decides the whole thing's over. And sure, a lot of moon conspiracies do fall apart. But the problem is, the moon doesn't need most of them. It was weird long before the internet got hold of it. So before anybody starts yelling about what might be on the far side of the moon, we need to deal with something less sexy and a hell of a lot more useful. The far side is already weird. Like, scientifically weird. And I know. The second somebody says, let's talk geology, half the room starts checking out like we're about to assign homework. But stay with me, because this part matters. The side of the moon we see from Earth, the near side, is the one with all those big dark patches, the Maria. Old lava plains, smoother, broader regions, the face people know. The one that, for lack of a better word, looks calmer. That's the moon people got used to. Then we finally got around the back, and it felt less like seeing the other side of the same moon, and more like meeting the nice neighbor's weird brother. The far side is rougher, more cratered, and generally a lot more beaten to hell. And it's not just surface ugly. The crust back there is thicker, in some places a lot thicker. And that changed everything about how that side ended up looking. On the near side, thinner crust made it easier for lava to break through and spread out, which is why you get those big dark seas people have stared at forever. On the far side, that happened way less. So instead of broad, dark plains, you get harder terrain, more scars, more of that old busted up look. It's the same moon, technically, but it doesn't really feel like it. And none of that is fringe. That's mainstream lunar science. NASA maps show it. Orbiter data backs it. Fewer maria, thicker crust, different geological history written across the damn thing. Scientists do have models for why that happened. Heat differences, tidal effects, uneven crust formation, some real ideas. But a model is not the same as closure. And this is the part that keeps bugging me. If this is one object, why does the side facing Earth just happen to be the side that looks smoother, darker, more familiar, while the hidden side looks older, rougher, and in some places like a different damn moon? Now, that doesn't prove anything exotic, so let's relax. But it does change the feel of the whole story, because the far side wasn't only hidden from us. When it finally showed up, it looked wrong. And when that face finally entered the human record, it didn't come in through some clean little science fair. It came in during the Cold War. In 1959, the Soviets did something no human being had ever done. They sent Luna 3 around the back of the moon and brought home the first pictures of the side nobody had ever seen. People really don't sit with that enough. Because this wasn't just a space milestone. It was the first time the hidden face of the moon entered the human record and didn't come in clean. The images were rough as hell, half scrambled, and nowhere near clean enough to make anybody feel settled. By today's standards, they look like something you'd get if you ran a ghost through bad Soviet hardware. The far side didn't arrive as closure. It showed up blurry, political, and already halfway inside an argument. And before most people had even figured out what the hell they were looking at, the military was already looking at the moon like land. And that's not me being dramatic. That's in the paperwork. In 1959, the US Army produced Project Horizon, a real document, not internet folklore, laying out a permanent military outpost on the moon. And no, not in some vague someday way. They were working through it like people who expected this to become real. Like men, cargo, construction phases, life support, nuclear systems, communications and surveillance, the whole package. These weren't dreamers, they were planners. Which is kind of bleak if you think about it, because apparently the first human instinct after seeing a new frontier is still, can we put a base on it? Then in 1961, the Air Force had Project Lunix, different branch but same fever. Another serious lunar concept, and another reminder that the moon was no longer being treated like a destination. It was being treated like terrain. Because once you read those documents, it gets a lot harder to pretend this was still just romance and science and mankind smiling for the cameras. The moon had already started becoming useful. A place that could carry signal, extend reach, and give militaries the kind of position they always start drooling over. And there's more from that same era that makes this feel less like science fiction and more like, well, of course they did. They were already running moon bounce experiments using the lunar surface to bounce radio signals and see what kind of communications value the moon might have. The second the moon can help carry signal, well, it stops being scenery. And once it stops being scenery, people get cagey fast. Now, that doesn't prove there's a base on the far side. What it does prove is something more useful. The public got wonder and the planners got position. And once the moon becomes military real estate on paper, the one place the public couldn't independently follow during Apollo starts feeling a whole lot less like a technical inconvenience and a whole lot more like a door. For all the talk about Apollo being the most watched mission story in human history, there was one part the public never really got to experience for themselves, at least not live. Every time the spacecraft moved behind the far side of the moon, the signal was gone. And that part is real. It's just physics. Once the vehicle slipped behind the moon, Earth lost line of sight with no direct communication, no live chatter, and no mission control in your ear. Just silence and whatever was happening out there, staying out there until the craft came back around. And people love flattening that into two dumb choices. Either it's just normal signal loss, so shut up, or they went behind the moon and all hell broke loose. Maybe one of those is true, but maybe neither is. The longest and the honest version is a little uglier than both. The far side created a real blind spot. And once the biggest mission story on Earth disappears into that blind spot, even for a little while, the public stops riding along. Now, they're waiting for the version that comes back. And that changes the story whether people like it or not. And yes, I know, some people hear that and think, well, so what? Radio's cut out, big deal. Except this isn't your uncle losing FM under an overpass. This is the moon, the hidden side. The one stretch of the mission nobody on Earth could independently follow in real time. Because now the official lunar story is moving through the one stretch the public can't directly witness. Behind the one part of the moon that already entered the human record blurry, weird, and not exactly confidence-inspiring. That's not proof of deception, but man, it is a beautiful habitat for suspicion. And once that exists, every weird moment out there starts feeling a little different. Which is exactly why Apollo 10 never really stayed buried. Because during one of those blind passes, Apollo 10 heard the thing people are still arguing about. There's a version of this story the internet absolutely loves because it's easy, and easy usually wins online. Apollo 10 goes behind the moon. The astronauts hear some weird, almost musical sound over the far side. And within about 6 seconds, somebody's already yelling, "There it is, proof." But proof of what exactly? Well, that depends which version of crazy they showed up with. That version sucks. The real version's better. Because the audio incident itself is real. During Apollo 10, the crew talked about hearing a strange whistling, almost flute-like sound in their communications. It was weird enough that they noticed it, and weird enough that they talked about it. And also weird enough that decades later, people were still dragging that clip back out every time the moon came up. Because, of course they were. You put human beings behind the hidden side of the moon, and in the one stretch the public can't independently follow, then you hand everybody audio that sounds like a shortwave radio having a nervous breakdown, what exactly did anyone think was going to happen? So, now let's do this like adults. This was a real mission, a real crew, and a real far side window. And the accepted explanation is plausible. It was most likely VHF radio interference between the command module and lunar module systems. In plain English, hardware stepping on hardware in a weird place and coughing up something that sounded a lot stranger than it probably was. And honestly, well, that's probably right. One side hears space music and starts building moon bases in their head before lunch. The other hears radio interference and decides the weirdness should die on contact. But that's not how people work, and it's definitely not how memory works. Where it happened actually matters. If that same sound happens in low Earth orbit, nobody cares. It becomes a nerd footnote and dies right there. But this happened on the far side of the moon, in the blind stretch, in the one place where the public was already waiting for the version that came back. Because once you accept that, Apollo 11 gets a lot harder to shrug off. Apollo 10 gave us a weird moment people still argue about. Apollo 11 gave us something worse, a record problem. And around the moon, record problems don't age gracefully. They rot. So before we go any further, we need to kill one of the dumbest moon stories on the internet. You've heard some version of it. Apollo 11 lands, Neil or Buzz looks out near the crater rim. Then comes the line people repeat like it's holy scripture. They're here. They're parked on the side of the crater. They're watching us. Or whatever version got photocopied through 300 conspiracy forums by people who think a source chain is a type of fence. That quote is garbage, so kill it. And if that makes you less interested, you're thinking about this backwards. Because the fake stuff was never the strongest part of the story, it was just the loudest. While everybody was busy arguing over a quote that doesn't hold together, The real problem was sitting somewhere a lot less sexy, in the archive. And no, I don't mean NASA lost everything, that's just lazy. But they absolutely mishandled source material tied to the most important event of the century, which is somehow worse because it's real. The original Apollo 11 moonwalk slow scan TV signal, the highest quality surface video from the moon, was not preserved the way any sane civilization should preserve something like that. What the public mostly lived with was a converted broadcast version, not the cleanest original source. And once the best source gets converted, downgraded, reused, or just disappears somewhere in a sloppy custody chain, the damage is already done. Later, NASA acknowledged that original telemetry and video materials were missing, reused, or poorly tracked over time. Now, maybe that's bureaucracy, tape reuse, sloppy archiving, government agencies doing what government agencies do, which is handling history like it's junk in a storage closet. It could be. But once the most important footage in modern history starts passing through missing reels, reused tapes, conversions, and muddy custody, nobody gets to slam their fist on the table later and demand blind trust. Absolutely not. Once the archive goes soft, everything after that turns into an argument. Now everybody's fighting over degraded copies, converted feeds, and a record that gets uglier the closer you look. That's the actual problem, not the fake quote. The fake quote is bait. The archive is what rots the floorboards. And once you see that, the next question gets a lot nastier than, did somebody say something weird on comms? You start asking how many of the strongest moon anomalies got buried because the dumbest ones were loud enough to keep everybody staring the wrong way. So after all that, after we throw the internet's dumbest moon garbage in the dumpster where it belongs, what's left? Well, more than there should be, honestly. And that's the problem. That's where the moon starts acting less like a dead rock and more like a place that keeps doing things it shouldn't. And the oldest lane in that pile is one almost nobody treats with the weight it deserves. The transient lunar phenomena. For centuries, people kept reporting flashes, glows, odd color shifts, bright patches that seemed to come and go, like haze-like effects that didn't stay put. And not just once or twice, it keeps showing up. Different eras, different observers with different equipment. Long before YouTube turned every blurry rock into a moon-based thumbnail, because if this was just post-Apollo internet disease, fine, throw it in the trash with the rest of the carnival junk. But it isn't. This stuff is old. And one place keeps showing up like it's trying to be annoying on purpose, the Aristarchus. If the moon has a neighborhood that keeps getting the cops called on it, it's Aristarchus. That crater shows up again and again in transient light reports. Enough that after a while, you're not looking at one weird note in a logbook anymore. You're looking at a pattern. Now, yes, there are mainstream explanations, outgassing, electrostatic dust, optical distortion, observer error. No, that doesn't mean moon fairies in a crater. Let's calm down. But enough survives the cleanup that this doesn't just go away. Then you get into the Apollo imagery. And this is where people immediately become insane. Because the second you question any of it, half the room acts like you just kicked over a church pew. So let me say this carefully. I am not doing the full Apollo trial in this section. That's its own bloodbath. But I'm also not pretending the official visual record is clean, because it isn't. Because whether you think Apollo happened exactly as sold, happened in some altered or managed form, or was stitched together out of real mission pieces in narrative theater, the same problem keeps showing up. The horizon can look wrong. Depth can feel off. Objects sometimes seem too visible where your brain says they shouldn't be. Certain bright edges, glows, and reflective oddities never quite settle down. And yes, the defenders always have a stack ready. Lighting, exposure, lens behavior, reflectivity, perspective. Fine, some of that can explain pieces. Pieces. And then there's the part that really drives people off the rails. The moon keeps looking artificial. Now, let me say this slowly so nobody throws a chair. A massive amount of lunar structure content online is garbage. Absolute garbage. People will take a blurry image, sharpen it until it cries, crank the contrast like they're interrogating it in a basement, and then circle a random shadow like they just discovered Atlantis with a JPEG from hell. But that is not evidence. Most of that stuff deserves to be buried in a crater and left there. But not all of it. And that's the part people hate. Because even after you strip out the obvious pareidolia, the fake outlines, the bad enhancements, the overprocessed nonsense, there are still terrain features and shadow geometries that keep triggering the same reaction in people who are actually trying to be careful. Why does that look so damn deliberate? Not therefore alien city, not confirmed tower, just why does that look built?
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
If the moon were just weird rock and bad archives, that would already be enough. But then you get to the people. And this is where it gets irritating. Because no, I'm not telling you one whistleblower proves there's a giant alien Costco on the far side. That's not how this works. What matters is that different people in different jobs across different years keep running into the same kind of problem. Image suppression, cleaned up photos, controlled access, anomalies the public wasn't supposed to see. At some point, you stop asking whether one story is flawless. You start asking why people keep tripping over the same kind of thing. Carl Wolf is the one people bring up first, and honestly, I get it. Wolf was an Air Force sergeant, tied to photographic work in the 1960s. According to his account, he was brought into a lunar image processing environment where another technician showed him photographs and said they had found structures on the far side of the moon. Not funny rocks either. Structures, towers, geometric forms, things that looked built. Now, can I independently prove Carl Wolf saw exactly what he said he saw? No, I cannot. But that's not really why his story matters. It matters because it lands right on top of the same pressure points we've already been stepping on this entire episode. Lunar image processing, controlled access, and the possibility that the public never got the raw version in the first place. That's why Wolf sticks. Then there's Donna Hare. And Donna Hare matters because her story lives in one of the most dangerous corners of this whole subject, image handling. Hare said she worked around NASA contractors and claimed certain photographs were being airbrushed or altered before public release to remove anomalies. You can argue over the edges of her story if you want, fine. Argue over the edges, but the core of it still looks bad. If even part of that is true, then the issue isn't NASA faked the moon. That's the toddler version. The real issue is uglier. The public relationship to lunar evidence may have been managed from the start. Not necessarily fabricated, but selected, cleaned up, shaped before it ever got to the people. And once you understand how much of the moon entered public consciousness through transmission chains, processed imagery, and broken custody, Donna Hare stops sounding like random folklore and starts sounding like an echo. Ken Johnston is messier. And I'm not pretending otherwise. Some of the claims around him have been challenged. Some of the imagery tied to him has been picked apart. Fine, I get that. But even there, he still ends up pointing at the same kind of mess. NASA adjacent handling, disputed imagery, missing or suppressed material, and the same recurring suspicion that the public did not get the whole picture. That's the value of him, not a clean smoking gun. Just another person brushing up against the same sore spot. And then there's the part people never quite know what to do with, the astronauts. Not because I'm about to tell you Buzz Aldrin confirmed the moon city in Morse code or whatever fresh hell the internet cooked up this week. I mean the way some of these men came back. They were guarded, heavier. Like they came back carrying something that didn't fit cleanly into the public version. Buzz gets abused the most because the internet uses him like a Ouija board. Every odd comment becomes proof for one side and nothing for the other. And yes, the famous monolith remark was about Phobos, not the moon. So let's keep your file cabinet clean. But Buzz still matters here for the same reason the others do. He's part of that weird Apollo hangover. That feeling that the official story may have been true in pieces and still not complete. And if that sounds too soft, think about the kind of mission these men were on. They leave Earth, move through blackout zones, deal with weird signal behavior, strange visuals, terrain that never quite looks normal. Then they come home to a planet that absolutely needs the story to be clean. That does something to people. So no, none of these witnesses prove there's a hidden base on the far side of the moon. What they do is something more useful than that. They keep pointing at the same basic shape. There was more in the imagery than the public got. And the moon may have looked a little too deliberate for comfort. And if people close to the pipeline kept running into the same shape too, then the real problem was never just what was on the moon. It was who got to decide what the rest of us were allowed to see. Now we're stepping into the part of this topic where normal people start getting a little uncomfortable. And that's good. Because if we came this far and didn't talk about the artificial moon theory, then we just did all that setup for nothing. And no, I'm not telling you it's proven. But I am telling you this. I used to think the hollow moon stuff was ridiculous. Like full tinfoil, easy to laugh at. Then I actually started digging. And the deeper I went, the less comfortable that laugh got. Because once you get past the cartoon version of this theory, you run into something a lot more irritating. The moon is genuinely strange. I mean structurally, historically, physically strange. Enough that the theory exists for reasons. Some of those reasons are nonsense. Enough of them aren't. And once you line them up, it stops sounding like a joke and starts sounding like a question, a bad one. Start with the simplest thing, because this is what people miss first. The moon is absurdly important. Take it away, and Earth doesn't just look darker at night. Earth behaves differently. Tides weaken hard. Coastal systems change. Marine rhythms change. Night cycles change. And more important than all of that, the moon helps stabilize Earth's axial tilt. Without the stabilizing pull, Earth's tilt can wander more over long stretches, which means uglier climate swings, nastier seasonal chaos, and a planet that may be a whole lot less friendly to long-term civilization. So right out of the gate, the moon is not just scenery. It behaves more like a system than a backdrop. Because if you were going to guide a biosphere, regulate a planet, or lock a world into a more stable operating range, a giant orbital stabilizer that controls tides, affects biological cycles, lights the night, and helps keep the whole thing from wobbling like a drunk shopping cart would be useful as hell. Does that prove somebody parked it there? No, not exactly. But it answers the obvious question. Why would an artificial moon even matter? Because if you were going to build one, this is exactly the kind of stuff you'd built it into doing. Then there's the eclipse ratio. And this one is either a staggering coincidence or it's weird in a way people should probably admit is weird. The sun is about 400 times wider than the moon. It's also about 400 times farther away. That's why from Earth, they appear almost the same size in the sky. That's what gives you a total solar eclipse. Now, yes, the numbers are approximate. Distances shift, orbits wobble. I know, I get it. But still, it's weird. Like, really weird. The object that rules the day and the object that rules the night line up so perfectly in our sky that one can completely blot out the other like it was designed to be a little too perfect for comfort. Natural? Well, maybe. Suspiciously theatrical? You tell me. Then you get to the mainstream origin story. The giant impact hypothesis. Early Earth gets hit by a Mars-sized object called Theia. Debris gets blasted out. Debris becomes the moon. That's the classroom version. The problem is the closer you look, the less tidy it feels. Because if some outside object slammed into Earth and built the moon out of debris, you'd expect clear compositional differences. But instead, in key isotopic signatures, especially oxygen, the moon looks way too much like Earth. That forced the model to start mutating. Higher energy impacts, fast-spinning Earth models, synestia models, more mixing, more patches, more whiteboards, more we still totally have this energy. That doesn't mean the model is fake. It means the model is not settled the way people pretend it is. Because every time somebody says, science already explained that, what they usually mean is, science has a working draft and people are still fighting over the details. Then there's the rang like a bell issue, which people on both sides somehow managed to ruin. During Apollo, NASA deliberately crashed hardware into the moon and recorded the seismic response. In some cases, the vibrations lasted longer than expected. That's where the famous line came from. Now, did that prove the moon is a giant hollow alien shell? No, it did not. Everybody breathe through your nose. Long-lasting vibrations can happen for natural reasons. Dry rock, fractured internal structure, no water, different seismic behavior than Earth. But the moon still did what it always does. You strip out the slogan, and there's still something odd left sitting there. And that pattern matters more than the slogan. Same with the lights. We already covered the flashes, the glows, the color shifts, and repeat offender regions like Aristarchus. So I'm not rerunning that circus. I'm just saying this. For something that's supposed to be a dead, inert rock, the moon has a funny habit of acting just lively enough to keep people arguing for centuries. And then there's the object itself. The moon's internal story still feels off. Its mass behavior is odd. Its structure is odd. And the side facing Earth and the side facing away don't even feel like they were raised in the same house. And then you get to the mythology, which is where some people lean in and some people instantly develop hives. To be clear, myth is not lab data, but myth is not worthless either. Sometimes it's memory. Sometimes it's symbolic language. Sometimes it's a real event wrapped in story because ancient people didn't have spreadsheets, hard drives, or a filing cabinet full of government lies. And there are old traditions that keep this theory from dying. The Zulu people, through accounts preserved and amplified by Credo Mutua, describe traditions in which the moon was not always there, or was brought into place, sometimes tied to beings who changed the world, the tides, and human life itself. Do you treat that as proof? No, you don't. But here's where people get fake skeptical and weird. A lot of folks will take one ancient text they were raised with and treat it like courtroom evidence. Then wave off every other civilization on Earth like they were just drunk in the dirt making things up. That's not skepticism, that's branding. The honest way to handle ancient material is the same across the board. Not as hard proof, but not as disposable nonsense either. You treat it like signal, like residue. Something real, remembered badly, or on purpose. And if you're gonna treat one ancient tradition like sacred evidence, you don't get to laugh off every other civilization on Earth just because one came with stained glass and tax exemptions. You file all of it the same way, not as proof, not as garbage, as pattern. And when enough of that pattern keeps surfacing from enough directions, serious people stop laughing so quickly. That's why this theory survives. Not because one guy found a blurry hexagon in a crater, because it didn't come from one thing. It came from a pile of things. A moon that matters way too much. A formation story that keeps needing patches. An object that keeps acting stranger than a dead rock should. Then you add the old stories. Cultures over and over whispering the same uncomfortable possibility, that the sky may not have always looked like this. Does that prove the moon was built? No. But if you're still laughing at the question after all that, that's not really skepticism anymore. That's obedience dressed up as intelligence. Because if the moon is not just strange, but placed, then this was never about a base. It was about the object itself. And if that still sounds like ancient smoke and mirrors, fine. Because the modern world is acting like the moon matters too. And modern powers don't spend this kind of money on bedtime stories. One of the weirdest parts of this whole story is the moon never really stopped being weird. We just got better at acting like it was settled. Or maybe not even acting, more like filing it away. Slapping a clean little label on it and moving on because people had jobs, kids, debt, and not a lot of spare time for lunar psychosis. Take the mascons. And if you've never heard that word, don't worry, it sounds fake. It means mass concentrations. Dense buried regions under the moon that create gravitational weirdness, strong enough to mess with spacecraft orbits, which is a pretty cute trick for a dead rock. Early missions found that out the hard way. You think you're in a stable orbit, then the moon quietly starts tugging on the spacecraft like, no, actually, I have other plans. Now, no, mascons do not prove the moon is artificial. I'm not doing the thing. I'm not pointing at one weird data point and screaming megastructure. Because the deeper you get into the moon, the less the simple version stays simple. Not shattered, just never as clean as advertised. And by now that should sound familiar, because that's the whole damn pattern. But honestly, that's not even the part that sticks in my teeth anymore. Because if the moon is so solved, why is everybody suddenly hustling back to it? Seriously, that's the part I can't unsee. NASA's Artemis program is the polished version, the public version. Flags, speeches, legacy, and the usual "we return for all mankind" wallpaper. But underneath all that, this is not tourism. This is setup. And yes, I know that sounds dramatic, but it isn't. Look where they care about most, the South Pole. Why? Water ice. And the second water enters the conversation, the moon stops being symbolic and starts being useful in the most practical, dirty, empire-building way possible. You can drink it, breathe it, split it into hydrogen and oxygen, turn it into fuel, keep crews alive, keep missions moving, and stop dragging every last pound up from Earth like a pack mule. At that point, you're not planting flags, you're building supply lines, and that changes everything. Then there's China, and this is where the whole "isn't it beautiful humanity's going back together" routine starts smelling a little fake. Because while the US wraps it in Apollo nostalgia, China is moving like a country that thinks the next real high ground might be overhead. Their far side work matters. Their relay systems matter. Their sample returns matter. Their long-term base planning absolutely matters. That's not dabbling. That's somebody showing up early, walking the property line, and checking where the fence is going to go. And once you zoom out, the pattern gets ugly fast. The moon is a communications platform, a surveillance platform, a staging point for deeper missions, and eventually, maybe the choke point for who gets to move between Earth and everything beyond it. And yes, they even have a clean little term for that now, cislunar domain awareness, which sounds like something a defense contractor invented 5 minutes before billing taxpayers for another mountain of money. But the translation? They are already planning who gets to watch that space, move through it, and eventually control it. That is not science fiction. That is planning. And if that doesn't tighten your neck up a little, I don't know what to tell you. Because even if every weird story in this episode turned out wrong, every whistleblower, every anomaly, every ugly little archival problem, modern powers are still treating the moon like strategic property. Not scenery, property. So no, that does not prove there's a hidden base up there. It doesn't prove the moon is artificial. But it sure as hell makes the old secrecy around it feel a whole lot less crazy. Because if the moon didn't matter, nobody would be racing to secure the water, the routes, the relay edge. All before the public has even finished clapping for the press conference. That's not exploration anymore. That's empire. And maybe that's the real turn here. Not is there a secret on the moon. I mean, maybe. But the more immediate question is why every major power on Earth keeps acting like the moon matters a whole lot more than they're willing to admit out loud. That's the smell. And once you see that, the weird stuff almost stops mattering for a second. Because even in the cleanest version of this story, the moon is still being treated like something people plan to own, and that changes the ending.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
There's a version of this story that would be easier and cleaner. We went to the moon. We learned what it was. Some weird stuff got exaggerated. The internet did what the internet does. End of story. Would have been nice. It would have saved everybody a headache. But that's not what this feels like, is it? Because the deeper you dig into this one, the less it feels like one big lie, and the more it feels like a place we were never allowed to look at straight. Not because every wild claim is true. A lot of them probably aren't. Some of them are pure mooncrack nonsense, and I say that with love. But even after you throw the dumb stuff overboard, the discomfort stays. The raw record was never clean. The science never stayed simple. And somehow, every time the moon comes back into the conversation, it comes back wrapped in strategy. In the public version, man, they polished that thing until it squeaked. Maybe that's normal. Maybe that's just what governments do when they spend impossible money, plant a flag, and need the story to stay neat for the next 50 years. Maybe. But I don't think that's all this is. Because when you strip this thing down, what's left isn't proof. It's pressure, missing context, weirdness that never fully settles. In the fact that every time the moon comes back into the conversation, it comes back wearing a uniform. That bothers me more than the alien stuff. Not whether there's a base up there, not whether somebody found ruins, not whether Buzz saw something strange and got told to keep it moving. Maybe, maybe not. But the part that feels real, the thing hanging over every ocean, every field, every Walmart parking lot, every kid staring out a bedroom window, still doesn't feel like it belongs entirely to us. That's a strange thing to say, I know, but I think it's true. It feels studied, claimed, managed. And that's different. Because when my kid looks up at the moon, I want that to feel simple. I want it to just be wonder, not territory, not strategy. Not another beautiful thing turned into property by men in suits with flags and briefings and a talent for ruining everything they touch. But that's the pattern, isn't it? Every beautiful thing eventually gets a fence around it. And maybe the moon isn't hiding a city. Maybe it's worse than that. Maybe the real story is colder. Maybe we built mythology around the moon because we were never allowed to see it raw. Or maybe empire just never changes. See the high ground, take the high ground, call it destiny. Whatever the truth is, I don't think the moon is unsettling because it's alien. I think it's unsettling because it keeps reminding us how little of the official story ever reaches us untouched. And that feeling doesn't stop when this video ends. And before I go, one message for NASA, Blue Origin, SpaceX, Elon, the Artemis crowd, all of them. If everybody who thinks the moon is artificial is crazy, if everybody who thinks there's something non-human on the far side is unhinged, if everybody who doubts the official landing story is just some tinfoil idiot, then shut us up and prove it. Not with press conferences, not with polished animations, not with another glossy PR reel and a panel of paid experts nodding at each other like dashboard dogs. I mean, prove it. Go back, show everything, unfiltered, full record, full telemetry, full imagery. No custody games, no selective release, no magic disappearing source material. You want the conspiracy talk to die? Then kill it the easy way. Prove it. Thanks for being here tonight. If you want more stories like this, you know where to find me, you know where the links are. And if you choose to support the channel, it really helps. I'll see you next time.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins. Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.